You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 16 September. I'm Simon Brown. I'm coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we chat with Chantal Marx, Supergroup, African Rainbow Results, and Fashini Group Update. We've got JC Scher from Ford Asset Management on human nature and the return to normal after the pandemic as that creates investment opportunities. And then Grant Smee from Only Realty on the pressures in the residential rental market. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb: South Africa ranks 90th in economic freedom rankings. And from Bloomberg, New Zealand predicts a shallower and longer COVID-19 slump. Morning markets. Overnight, US was green, S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ 1.2%. Asia also green, Sydney up 1%, Tokyo up 0.2%, commodities green, and gold $1,967 an ounce. The Rand 16.41 against the US dollar. And top 40 opening call, looking for a green open about 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Chantal Marx. She is Head Research, F&B Wealth and Investments. Chantal, morning. Appreciate your time. A bunch of results out yesterday. Supergroup, I suppose, the first. Let's touch on those. They were out, late afternoon. My sense is always, these sort of logistic companies very much tied to GDP. GDP globally collapsed. My sense is a horror set of numbers, but in no sense surprising. And I imagine they should be able to bounce fairly strongly from this bad year of results for them?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not only the logistics business that suffered during this period, but they are exposed to dealerships, car dealerships or motor dealerships, both in South Africa and in the UK. And of course, these companies these businesses were closed for 2 months odd. So I think that just them being open for longer than 6 months to a year, we'll already see that base impact coming through. And if you look at the underlying result, the nice thing about Supergroup is they're really great with disclosure. So they told us exactly what they estimated COVID-19 related costs to be. So if you look at the underlying result, revenue would have been up 5% under normal conditions, which I think is pretty solid for a company like Supergroup operating in an economy like South Africa's economy.
Yeah, that is. I mean, they do have really, really excellent disclosure, and that makes, I love companies that do that. A lot more to read, but it makes a lot more sense. African Rainbow Capital. I mean, this is a head-scratching one. I mean, there's lots of moving parts here. In essence, they're a holding company. They're what they call intrinsic NAV around 9.50, IFRS NAV around 9.50, share price around 2.50. They own Rain. They've got Time Bank. They've got some good assets, but this one has just not inspired the market one inch since listing.
Absolutely. It's been quite disappointing to me from a personal perspective as well, because I quite highly rate the management team. I think they're excellent operators with a wonderful track record of creating value for shareholders. And if you look at some of these investments, you have Rain that's already breaking even. And I mean, it's more or less a startup, right? It isn't that old. And if you have most of these kind of smaller investments that are also expected to start breaking even soon or be cash flow positive soon. So you should be trading closer to your net asset value if you think about things from a textbook point of view. But sentiment around this stock has been negative for a very long time. And I don't think that this move to announce a non-renounceable rights offer, effectively forcing shareholders into allocating additional capital is going to make the market trust them anymore.
Yeah, and always a lot of concern around fees here as well, the non-renounceable, which means you can't sell those rights, which normally you can. Kura did the same, non-renounceable. Either you take them up or they lapse. But is there, I mean, to your point, I agree with you. Some great assets underlying there, trading at, let's call it a quarter of net asset value. After the rights issues shaken out, could this be a bottom draw? Because at some point, Rain, TymeBank, and many of their others are going to be really significant businesses in their own right.
Yes, and I mean, even if you look at something like Alexander Forbes, which they also own a pretty chunky stake in, Alexander Forbes in itself is very undervalued at the moment. So you could even have a value unlock whereby Alexander Forbes trades closer to its fair value, and that would lift up the intrinsic net asset value for this entire group. So there are lots of levers to pull, and I think that there are lots of opportunities for this company to re-rate. It's just a matter of trust at this point in time. So as long as the market doesn't trust this team and this company, I think they're going to struggle to see any sort of meaningful re-rating. But certainly there's a chance given the strength of the underlying portfolio.
Yeah, so maybe it's a wait and see. Wait for things to start to happen. Fashini Group trading update. This is the period to end September. So this is boom, you know, lockdown from hard lockdown to sort of soft lockdown. The stock really had a massive week last week as everyone went big on SA Inc. They came out with an update. They're expecting, what are the headline, turnover down 29.7%. Market sold them off 4.8%. I got to be honest, I was scratching my head I'm not sure what the market was expecting. This was the hardest 6 months that Fashini's is ever going to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a couple of reasons why the market didn't like this, though. So even though it's understandable that they would have been under a lot of pressure from a turnover perspective, we knew that the trading statement was going to be very weak. We expect full year results to fall quite significantly. But I think if you look at some of the trends in Australia and the UK in terms of sales, they disclosed the lockdown period, and then they separately disclosed July numbers and August mm-hmm. numbers. And you could see a nice pickup in activity in July, and then a fall-off in August. I'm not sure if it's related in Australia, for example, to some of the regions there closing or going back into full lockdowns, or in the UK, just people not going back to the high street. But it does make for ugly reading when you see that initial nice bump and then a fall-off again in August. I think that their South African business actually would be the better of the three at the moment. And unfortunately for TFG or for Fashini, who've actually had a good track record of going overseas, I think the market's memory is quite long. And whenever it looks like your offshore investments are going a bit pear-shaped, the market will punish you for that.
Yeah, the market's like an elephant. It remembers forever. Chantal Marks, Head Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Thank you very much for your early morning time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with JC Sher. He's from Ford Asset Management. JC, appreciate your time this morning, afternoon, where you are in Singapore. Pandemic, we've seen a lot of comment around how our daily lives, they obviously have changed. The last couple of months have changed it. And the question is, how is it going to change going forward? You're taking a view that in many senses, human beings, we're social. We like going out for dinner. We like holidays. We like to be entertained. We like to dream. In essence, these are core human traits, and they're going to return. And there are therefore companies that are going to play into the space, and hence potentially some great investment opportunities out there.
Yes. Thanks so much for having me on the call today. I think the clear thing that a lot of people have focused on, given the COVID situation, clearly is the biggest question is what's going to change and what behaviors are going to stay, assuming that the situation kind of normalizes over time. But I think from our experience, it's that many of the things that we do on a day-to-day basis, be it kind of looking forward to traveling to a new holiday destination or looking forward to buying that dream luxury bag or stuff like that, you know, they don't quite really kind of offer as much. But you know, given the market situation, given the noise in the market, and obviously temporary closures and lockdowns, the demand for the travel or retail in general would all be pretty high. And this clearly results in kind of what we view to be temporary drawdowns in a selected group of stock names, and of which some of these companies have actually very strong kind of fundamentals. And if we believe that we emerge from the current pandemic as we have from previous pandemics, then clearly the long-term demand for many of these things are not actually impaired. So that's kind of the lens that we have taken, that we have approached and kind of helped us look through the noise that's in the market and find some of kind of more attractive names to dive into at more attractive valuations during this period of time.
Yeah, I mean, and one of these companies, Tencent, which obviously as a South African, we know it via NASPAS. And I think oftentimes we perhaps don't fully appreciate just what a giant of a company it is. It helps people interact with their WeChat. They've got their online gaming. Both of those play into a human desire to interact, to have fun, to be entertained. Tencent's a lot more than that. But it's incredibly well positioned, you know, coming into the lockdown. It's well positioned for a lockdown scenario, and even as we come out of it, it's going to actually probably come out of it still stronger.
Exactly. So I guess like the way we kind of try to think about it is, again, coming back to this theme of concerns where if you think about like a company like Tencent, you mentioned the various things that they've been doing, you know, they were not doing it in specific response to COVID or pandemic, but rather, if you think about what they're doing, it has always been focused on value creation across a whole variety of their assets, be it via WeChat, be it via payment. It's always about kind of how do you create a product that adds value to people's life, how do you create a product that solves fundamental demand needs within the consumer pool. And so clearly the name has done well. Clearly the name is a COVID beneficiary, given lockdown and people are stuck at home watching videos, shopping on e-commerce, or playing a lot more Tencent games. But what they are really doing is really steady as it goes. It's what they were doing previously. And so, you know, it's really important to kind of just focus on some of these companies that are persistently looking for ways to create value in people's lives. And that is the value that eventually gets reflected in the earnings and ultimately share prices.
Yeah, another would be JD.com, which is sort of the Amazon of Asia. And again, we all talk and we know Amazon, but you know, JD is out there and absolutely delivering. It's JC Sher. He's an analyst at Ford Asset Management. Appreciate your time. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years. Constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Today now with Grant Smee. He's MD at Oni Realty. Grant, appreciate your time this morning. Lots of reports out there around a booming sort of sales in the lower levels of the property market. But the flip side is the residential space. And certainly reports I'm seeing, and I did ask you to confirm, we're seeing actually a fair bit of oversupply of stock in the residential property market in South Africa.
Yeah, good morning. So there certainly is not only on the sales side, we're seeing sort of quite a high level of demand in certain areas for residential property where people are buying actively buying, and that's probably a lot to do with pent-up demand during the lockdown period, as well as taking advantage of the lower interest rates. But in the rental side, certainly there's a lot of stock out there at the moment, particularly in metropolitan areas. and very much so in Cape Town due to Airbnbs being converted from short-term to long-term.
I was going to say, well, what drives that? I suppose, you know, you had an Airbnb that got shut down. You move it into the rental space, and suddenly you see that oversupply. Is it sort of geographic? You mentioned Cape Town, so sort of worse in Cape Town because of the high Airbnb, perhaps not so bad in up in Johannesburg, and maybe even less bad sort of down at the coast in Durban or PE.
Yeah, so I mean, Cape Town, if we speak of Airbnb sort of affecting Cape Town, it really focuses on the CBD and Atlantic seaboard. If you go into the more the suburban areas, the southern suburbs, west coast, and up into northern suburbs, that doesn't have as much an effect. And then you've got a very similar situation to Joburg and Durban. And what's happened in those areas is people either downsizing or consolidating, you know, families co-living together, mm-hmm. or moving into cheaper accommodation. So you are seeing more expensive rentals staying open for longer, and then people moving to cheaper rentals. But at that level, there's a high level of development, but in the North Coast, in Durban, in Joburg, as well as in Cape Town. So there's a lot of stock available from developers at the affordable level.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched Bourbon obviously listed. You mentioned the north coast of KZN, sort of north of Durban. They're doing a lot up there. Great development, but it brings a lot of stock. And this ultimately, I mean, it's driving prices down. Interestingly, it's also reducing the quality of tenants. So someone who owns a property looking to rent it out, it's actually a really tough space you're in. You're struggling to get a price, and you're struggling for a quality tenant.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, price, there's massive price pressure at the moment. You know, the big portfolio landlords are adding very flexible lease terms. They're taking tenants without deposits. They're allowing tenants to move in and not pay the first month's rent. So what that does to the private owner is put them under pressure, because a lot of private landlords need every single month's rent if they can possibly get it, and now they're competing against portfolio owners. So they have to drop their price significantly and prevent much more flexible lease terms to their tenants, and that puts them under pressure. So we're seeing pressure across the board, both in the portfolio landlord space as well as individuals. Landlords, but the individual landlords are under the most pressure because they usually have one, two, or three properties, so they don't have that that ability to be as flexible as the portfolio owners.
Yeah, so you need to stand out. You make a great point there. I mean, I was just thinking you drop your price, but actually you can be a lot more creative. You can do flexible leasings, that sort of thing, to make yourself stand out, to attract the better quality tenant. And unfortunately, that hurts from an economic perspective, but it might be worth it to take a bit of a hit sort of this year to sort of keep yourself in the game.
Yeah, certainly. Adding Wi-Fi and resolve or something that you can do, inexpensively for tenants to make it more attractive, definitely flexible lease terms, so shorter lease at 6 month or 12 month lease with a shorter notice period, potentially no deposit, which I'd warn against. You know, mm-hmm. you want to actually have at least some protection, and then, you know, a discounted rental. So there are things that you can do to encourage tenants to move in and differentiate stuff.
Property, most things are cyclical. Property is undoubtedly cyclical. In short answer, this will pass. In any sense of how long, however, I mean, is this something that will play out, you know, just over the rest of this year, or is it going to play into sort of deep into 2021? Or is this one of those impossible questions that we can answer in a year, but we can't answer now?
Yeah, no, I think, we can take, obviously COVID is an unprecedented event, but we can look at periods of time, the 2008 economic crash, 2002 recessions, and then try and sort of predict going forward what's going to happen. What I do foresee is that the effects of COVID and the lockdown and the economic lockdown are still only going to come through in the residential sales market probably early next year. Mm-hmm. There was a moratorium on banks taking action against those who defaulted for a long period of time, and that action can only start happening and processing through the courts now. So we're going to see those cases come through in early January, where either you have your defaulted foreclosures and property comes to the market then because they have to. So the sales market, I think, is going to slow down and become very much a buyer's market in early 2021, and then probably for the period of 18 months to 2 years at least. Banks are sort of very open to lending, particularly to first-time buyers, so there's an opportunity for first-time buyers to buy. And with interest rates relatively low, at the lowest level they have been for all the time. The, you know, it's an opportunity for people to buy, but they do need to keep in mind that where interest rates are low, they will go up. So again, your affordability will be under pressure as those as interest rates do increase over time. So you know, the long answer to the short question is probably looking at an 18 to 24 month buyer's market. Rentals were under pressure before COVID, so I do think that we're going to have a period of time, probably 2 to 3 years of landlords being under affordability pressure or pressure in terms of the rentals and ability to secure tenants.
Okay, 2 to 3 years. It's quite a chunky period out there, but hang in, it is cyclical. Grant Smee, MD, Only Realty, appreciate your time this morning, sir. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. MoneyWeb website or the app, and of course the podcast on the self-same website and app and wherever you find good podcasts. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Kudora, and to you for listening, my guests, for the early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.